Hi, everyone, and welcome. This is Dave Kruger. We're about to start Coaching Transitions, the Successful Navigation of Life Changes. We have a number of people on the line, and I'll ask you, if you would, to manage the background noise. If you have a headset, you have a mute button. If you don't, mute is star 6. And when you get ready to talk or to interact, do star 6 again so you can unmute and engage. I sent around an email with a couple of questions. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to see it. I was just given the final roster by CTA very recently. The two questions are, one, if we were to sit down together right now, face-to-face, what's the most important question that you have about this topic of change and transition? And secondly, if you were to walk away from this seminar series saying it was the one of the best you've ever been in, what would you walk away with? So I appreciate those of you who did happen to see the email and have sent responses. That's very helpful. Your responses really do inform some of the discussion and some of the illustrations I give. So anyone want to log in now about either of those two questions, what you'd most like us to talk about and what you'd like to walk away with? Any responses? And if you would, identify yourself and where you are, if you don't mind, because I know we have people from all over the globe on the call, so it might be interesting to see where your colleague coaches are from. So, to anyone.
Hi, Dave. This is David Hibbs.
Welcome. Hey.
Thank you. I live in Rochester, New York, but this week I'm on vacation down in Asheville, North Carolina, but I didn't want to miss this call.
All right. Well, I'm glad you were able to join us, my man. That's great.
You betcha. My first question is, truthfully, I just got off the orientation call with Lisa and Lori. And some of the things we talked about were just in general. And one item it said was, we agreed that coaches are not counselors or therapists. I agree, therapist. But I guess the counseling is a little fuzzy, as far as yes, we should, no, we shouldn't. So I guess that's my question. Can we define more the reason counseling is not part of being a coach?
Okay, and I certainly agree with that. And here's a reference that each of you may find to be helpful for that question. On the homepage of my website, MentorPath, MENTORPATH, at the bottom right, there's a link to download a paper, a white paper, on the distinctions of coaching from therapy and counseling. And it might be helpful to illuminate some of this. One of the things that we particularly do in coaching is to look at now and next, to look at the choice architecture of this moment, now and going forward. We use the past to inform, not to go back into the past, not to look at or understand the dynamics or the meanings or the implications as one might in a therapy or counseling, but to use the past simply to inform the present to make the best choice possible now and going forward. And you'll see, you see in the titles of the four seminars that we're about to do, the dynamics of change and transition, how to change mind, brain, and behavior, the roadmap for a new story, and the last, specific challenges and opportunities in transitions. So one of the reasons I think this is such an important topic for professional coaches is that every client you work with will be undergoing some change and some transition. This is ubiquitous. Every client will consistently, throughout the course of work with you, be navigating change and transition, and you're going to be facilitating that process. You're going to be guiding, mentor coaching, and collaborating with someone in that. So we're going to look at all of the components of that, the dynamics, some of the principles, and some of the ways to further guide someone by understanding more about how the mind and brain work. So I think you're in for a treat. I think you're in for I'm a little biased, of course, and I think you're in for expanding knowledge about something that is very, very fundamental to whatever you do in coaching. So thanks for that, David, and you'll see how what we're going to be talking about will expand that just a bit further. And probably most of you know, after 25 years of practicing as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, I made a wholesale transition over a decade ago to mentor coaching. And I'm very familiar with where one end ends and the other began. So if there are further questions about this throughout our time together, we'll definitely come back to that. So thanks very much. Who else? Other questions or thoughts or things you'd like us to be sure and cover? I'll preserve a bit of time at the beginning of each of the seminars for any challenges or clarifications that each of you have. And then once we begin the presentation part, I'll put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the muting and that sort of thing. But I'll preserve a bit of time at the end for clarification and question and discussion there too. So anything else now, or anyone else want to log in with what you would like us to be sure and cover, or what kind of burning question you have?
Hi, David. This is Anne Marie Silly. I am in Mason, Ohio,
north
of Cincinnati.
Yeah, go ahead.
My question is actually, along a similar lines as to the previous question. One of the burning questions I have is whether or not, as coaches, we can coach all transitions that are possible in life, or ones that are typically, or maybe it's stereotypically, more reserved for counseling, like divorce or death. Are those off limits, if you will? So I'm curious to hear how what the principles are of coaching transitions broadly, and how to help those transitions that are extremely emotionally, or maybe more emotionally charged than others.
Absolutely. And that's why I want to spend the second seminar on how to change mind, brain, and behavior, because we can remain in a coaching focus and coach any transition of any nature, because the tools and the methods and principles are fundamental to coaching. We remain in a coaching framework. And I believe that we can, in some ways, do work faster, better, and more effectively in coaching. I've seen this happen, because one of the things we get into, one thing we know now from neuroscience, that when you get into revisiting a problem or trying to work through a problem, even though the goal is to understand the dynamics and come to a better ending, revisiting the problem etches it further in your brain. So even though you write a better ending to the story, you're still recreating the old story and etching it a bit further. And I also saw, when doing therapy and analysis, 1,000 better endings to an old story still is the process of recreating the old story. So we're going to look at this whole experience of change and transition and the dynamics and the aspects that are applicable from a coaching perspective, so that it will be highly useful to you in whatever application you want to make. And there are coaching applications to a broad range of changes and transitions, and specifically to the kind of change and transitions that people are going through just by doing something new. Whenever someone does something new and engages in a new behavior, that's a change, and that's a challenge, because, first of all, they're departing a comfort zone. So they're going to be, by definition, uncomfortable and have trepidation or concern. Plus, when they began something new, their brain error detection mechanism is going to read as, this isn't right, because the things that we do in a repeated way, our brain creates neuronal pathways and networks to make it automatic, to utilize energy in a very expedient way. So from an evolutionary perspective, what our brains do to make the repeated tasks easy is challenged by change. So every client you have with every step into a new experience is going to have uncertainty, trepidation, anxiety, and we're going to be talking about that in more specific ways and how we can facilitate that as coaches, again, in a here and now way. So absolutely,
right.
we'll be addressing that. Thank you. Who else? Any other input or questions or where you'd like to get to? Look at those questions in my email, and if you have just a minute or two and have a thought about it, please jot it down and send it to me. I regard those with great care, and we'll use that to inform some of the discussion I have to be sure and include that. So take a look at the email, and if there's nothing else, now I'll move into the material. But, you know, final call, any thoughts or check-ins? Okay, well, I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and then we'll have some time at the end for discussion. So anything that comes up, jot it down, and we'll return to it. Okay, we're going to first look at the dynamics of change and transition. First, the question, what's your story? When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories of our childhoods, our families, of what's important to us. When we know people well, we know their stories, what's important, what shaped and molded them, the trials and turning points that have tested them. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experiences, a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, and where we'll go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. A good story is never more necessary than at a time of change and transition, a time that's unsettling, confusing, uncertain, insecure. The ability to craft a good story at this crucial time is significant to the success of everything that will follow. We learn through stories. We use stories to understand, to make sense of things, and to remember. A good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we were, where we are, and the uncertain future. So let's first look at the dynamics of change itself. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, or change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. First, the idea of change will create anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, trepidation, even anxiety. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, expansion into the new experience. Then, finally, mastery. Two additional aspects of experiencing change may seem paradoxical, and I want to highlight them right here. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. This is not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better, it'll make it work. Secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. This carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. So our very best solution, the very best we could do at a time, we learn now there's something better. So it's kind of a narcissistic injury. And there's a portion of our brain that organizes a sense of self. And this is an affront to that organized portion of our brain that creates a sense of self to be doing something or considering something different. So there are at least six components to this dynamic of change. Now, these are not headlines. You won't see signs that you can label. These are just for your reflection to think about internal conceptual markers for your clients. The myth that there is a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will resolve all problems. The disappointment that nothing's really perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The development. The recognition that no one's going to take care of it for you. The growth to take the next best action. And the consolidation. The happy, sad experience resulting. Happy about the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle and moving ahead, and sad about mourning an old story. Every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And as Agnes Allen, an American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause a similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship in the past. The reason it's important to recognize this is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but come from the resonance with similar experiences in the past. Letting go is difficult. Herodotus, Greek historian in the 5th century BC, said this, "Diseases always attack men when they are exposed to change. Even when we look forward to a change, really positively anticipate it, some of us still hold on to what we used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good or bad idea. We're defined and define ourselves by our roles and relationships, those we like as well as ones we don't. So letting go is an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating the passage, separating the old from the new. The characteristic ways of coping with endings need to be understood. Each person has his or her own style of ending and new beginning. People tend to respond to endings in their own typical way, to have characteristic reactions to endings, and a similar mental state and mood. Four of the most common styles of ending. Abrupt, which is designed to deny the impact and the meaning of change. Slow and gradual, so that it's difficult to see that anything important is really happening. External focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act upon them when change is in the air. And finally, active versus passive, proactive or reactive, in other words. Some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. Well, she just walked out, no warning, no nothing, she just left me. It's like someone who shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive, calls attention to himself and makes everybody suspicious. How you approach change comes from the style you've developed for dealing with endings. That style is likely to reflect early experience as well as later influence and be consistent over time and situation. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern as with other important losses. One person, for example, may feel the grief and anxiety for the entire group. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over routine responsibility. And another assumes control for the situation. The way of responding tends to be consistent for each person. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. Now, we're not talking about just big endings here, like divorce, career transition, job loss, children leaving for college, retirement. And think about how any of these can even have their subspecialties of niche coaching. Even the small endings have their own personality that's consistent with the big endings, Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave? Do you suddenly say that it was a nice evening and abruptly dash out? Did you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of plan so you could avoid the goodbyes? Notice how the small and large endings can be the same. Leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as leaving a dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the one who stays late both avoid endings in their own way, as well as the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher as well as a lingerer share the same dynamic. There are things we don't want to happen, but have to accept. Things we don't want to know, but have to learn. People we can't live without, but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. Here are some principles of letting go. And there are 10 here, and I would say 10 and counting. 1, accept the reality as well as the importance of the subjective losses, of the meanings of the losses to you, in other words. Acknowledge the loss openly. Accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction comes because of the emotional impact of the loss as well as the cumulative past experiences with losses. Expect and accept the process of grief and each of its 5 stages: anger, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, then disorientation and confusion. Compensate for the losses. Ask, what can I give back to balance what has been taken away or lost? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. Define what's over and what isn't over. Really important, I think. Mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. An example, when Renee McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules no one could remember. In a management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. He then pushed them to the floor and held up a single piece of paper on which the corporate principles were typed. He said, "These are our new rules." Treat the past with respect. Take a piece of the old story with you. And finally, endings ensure the continuity of what really matters. And the past, the good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they could have ever experienced before. The transition process by which people can get through change is a system that's well mapped, and that's why I want to look at the map with you. So, we've looked at the dynamics of change. Now let's look at the dynamics of transition. The change event is the snapshot. The change process is the wide-angle view. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. The transition is the process, the internal story of change, a shift in orientation, even self-definition. Transition is awareness of the seasonal cycles while attending to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. You transform a new identity to internalize the changes, to sustain and enhance them. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present and foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person who you are today, and the person who you will be tomorrow, only more so. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned, and along with them, the self left behind. You also have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seem to involve new relationships, but they can also involve new places or projects. For some, it begins with a new state of mind, a new feeling, self-image, or goal. Sometimes, the beginning results from careful and conscious effort. But for many people, important new beginnings have a mysterious and sometimes accidental quality to them. Although we think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully to start again after an ending, some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. I'll give you an example. 2 years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston to catch the sunset. Now, one of the measures of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets I'm at the ranch, usually on the weekend, on the porch with a cigar and a single malt scotch, watching the sunset over the lake and trees. But I decided for some unknown reason to stay for the social hour, a wine and cheese event. Nothing, by the way, to compare to any single malt scotch. Never mind the cigar and the sunset. There I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on the porch I didn't get to that evening for sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. That was 10 years ago. It's her greeting you heard when you signed on at the beginning of the seminar. Now, without a transition, change simply rearranges the furniture. People imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes, such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, and developing new interests. Yet the challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of a business story to create a new one. At times, rituals and celebrations further the process of transition as well as serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for both change and transition deserve attention. Transition is a process, and it takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to make a baby. There are three components of transition. First, there's an ending, then a neutral zone, an important directionless time, at least from the outside, in between, filled with mourning, with work, and with getting ready. Then you finish with a new beginning. So let's talk about these components of transition, because I think they are each important in their own right, important for us to understand as mentor coaches. First, the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first, willingly or unwillingly, an ending. So the first task is to let go. Whether at the individual or the organizational level, whether the source of transition is an external change or internal development, the transactions always start with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now. The most common mistake is to add a new pattern to the ones already existing. And that's the most common mistake people make in working with a coach, I think, is to try to add a new pattern to the ones they already have without disrupting or ending an old pattern and instituting a new one. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. And this can be a little baffling at times. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by a divorce or job loss, while another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, but be demolished by the loss of a pet. Now, here's one dramatic way to mark an ending in a story, and it's a strategy. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead and knew the dangers that they faced and knew how scared they were. Some had even called it hopeless. Faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. Cortes burned the ships. Here are some components of an ending process. There are usually five aspects of an ending experience. Now, these are all in the annotated outline that you have and hopefully have downloaded, printed, so that you can just kind of listen to see if this makes sense. First, disengagement. Usual events disengage the context and the identity in which people know themselves. Divorce, death, job change, move, illness. This disengagement begins a process of change. Two, dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual practices are taken apart a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves a slow unpacking the lost relationship, including the lost identity that's part of it. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore. But yet the new way is not there yet as this dismantling occurs. Three, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also lose an old way of defining yourself, a sense of yourself in an old way. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. I thought about this a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice and teaching of psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become an executive mentor coach. For 25 years of practice and 7 years prior to that of medical school and residency, I identified with being a doctor. I even wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it. I had done what I wanted to do as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, and I was ready to move on. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as of transformation and self-renewal. Four, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that in some sense your world indeed is simply no longer the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience through the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place. Some significant transitions begin with disenchantment. So this is not an ordered sequence here of 1 through 5. The loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go. Five, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of place, space, as well as time. The usual way of structuring time changes. The future is unclear. Now, as I mentioned, these elements of ending are not in sequence or any particular order at all. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which leads to disengagement. Now, if you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment and then becomes disoriented. That's 1-4-5. There's no normal or natural order to this sequence, nor is there any normal order of reactions to an ending. Endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. Notice that only the first, disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. The second, dismantling, can be either internal or external, but the last three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to the past, yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, to leave the relationship, the job, or to move across the country. This focus uses change to avoid transition, and that's important, to use change to avoid transition by focusing on the external. To storm out of a job because of a bad boss, rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses. To end another relationship, rather than letting go of the behaviors, beliefs, and attitude that keep choosing the same people and recreating the same relationships. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? Catherine Ann Porter said, let me see if I can get this. She said, his mother disappointed and left him. 1,000 women since have paid for that. After someone struggles initially with the change and then begins to grapple with the transition, this is the true work, the beginning of transformation. Now, the second component, the mid-phase, the neutral zone, it just looks neutral from the surface. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or relationship or even of an identity. The real problem is the time of nothingness that awakens old fears about abandonment and death. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect that as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People will resist both the change and transition. They will return to the familiar. And in working with someone, we can help reframe this return to the familiar as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. This in-between time of transformation is the real work of letting go, and it prepares the foundation for the next stage. It's important not to rush through this mid-phase, this neutral zone, too quickly in order to avoid or minimize the disruption. This is a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I had planned it for a number of years. At 25, I was going to stop. I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in my mind and heart, and I would be tempted to revert to that old identity and style of being when in doubt about my new endeavor, which is why I made a wholesale transition. I can kind of burn the ships. To retire completely from my medical practice and close that out in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch writing and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. In another era, the person in transition left the village and went into a forest or desert to remain for a time. Removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered a generation of a new sense of self. Actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized at the time. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time to create a transition, important work is avoided. If a transition is treated like an event, like crossing a street, a necessary process is averted. Often someone, without even quite knowing why, finds ways of being alone and away from familiar distractions. Sometimes it's a long weekend alone in a quiet place. Having the time to think things over and not do much of anything is the point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that sometime after the age of 40, people transition from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate competence to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning and work in its results. This is the shift from the question of how to the question of why. Competence begins to lose its force as a source of motivation. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating, less stimulating of particular brain circuits. The brain also plays a role in this process. Dopamine is the brain chemical that induces excitement by anticipating pleasure or reward. The rush from dopamine release motivates people to take risks. The risk is exciting, adding to dopamine release. But neuroscientists have shown that anticipating a reward is even more exciting than actually receiving it. Why is this? Because receiving a reward actually shuts down the anticipatory pleasure and release of dopamine, and along with it the accompanying positive feelings and high energy. the brain shifts to another system mediated by norepinephrine. This is the chemical system of marathons, not of sprints like dopamine. This explains the paradox that the expectation of an event is more exciting at times than the actual event. This has been demonstrated in a number of ways. An investor will feel more positive when expecting a stock to rise, yet not feel nearly as excited as anticipated when it actually does rise. Or the purchase of a big-ticket item, a new car, isn't as exciting as expected. Buyer's remorse is an example of this. And another example, and think about this, clients hit plateaus in coaching after 1 to 2 months and consider suspending work. So what we can do in coaching is to foster attitudes that prompt curiosity, openness, and which introduce new learning, for example, to ladder challenges and successes. And by knowing this phenomenon, we can address and explain it as a natural development. So, two questions to focus on the meanings of transitions at a particular time in life. One, what is it time to let go of in my life right now? Transition starts with letting go. An important distinction between a change and a transition is that change is focused on reaching a goal, and transitions begin with letting go of what no longer fits the life stage you're in. Each person has to figure out what no longer fits. It's usually internal rather than external, as a hint here. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you have always seen yourself, some world outlook or attitude toward others, perhaps. Two, what is waiting to make its entrance into my life now? The answer is usually something internal, subjective, often in the shape of an idea or a question you ask yourself. It may feel like a message to you, a message that something that's standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. Now, we have to deal with endings all of our lives, yet curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they're simply the first phase of a transition process and a necessary precondition for self-renewal. So at the same time we fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we try to avoid them. I saw this in therapy and analytic practice. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but the failure to internalize that person and relationship. For some, their present consists at least in part of a past they have not yet let go of. An illustration of the emptiness of this neutral zone is Leo Tolstoy's description. This is the way he put it. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped. And yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was being played on me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What I shall do tomorrow? What I will become? And what will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? The reasons for this emptiness between the old life and the new include the process of transformation is essentially a death and rebirth process rather than a mechanical modification. And the process of disengagement and reintegration is the source of renewal, just the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter and to shed its leaves in order to take on new. And also, the emptiness between the stages of a life journey provides a perspective on the stages themselves. Cézanne said, I don't paint things, I paint the difference between things. Here, it applies in this way. This in-between time provides access to a view, a perspective that can occur nowhere else. So here's a summary of creative use of this mid-phase, of this neutral zone. embrace setbacks, losses, and disadvantages as entry points into new solutions. Hear the reframing here, and the reframing you can do as mentor coaches. Establish a regular time and place to be alone, to step back, to take stock, to question the usual, and to come up with new and creative solutions. In other words, give it the importance and the perspective of making an appointment with yourself to do this work. 3, provide opportunities for others important in your change and transition to step back and review with you, out loud with you preferably. 4, accept your need for this time in the neutral zone. Make sense of your experience at this time as important so that it doesn't feel like a dead-end road. Understanding this transition phase helps avoid the traps of moving fast forward or going into reverse to attempt to re-enter the old situation. Trying to speed things up disrupts the necessary process that occurs. Remember, it's a process, not an event. 5, engage in training and techniques of discovery and innovation. And you're doing that right now. Become informed about the change and the transition process, what you're doing just now, and you will help your clients do. Take this opportunity to discover what you really want as well. 6, engage in experimentation. Try out ideas that you'd wished you'd had the chance to try. After I closed my practice, I considered using my experiences as founder and CEO of a couple of healthcare corporations and involvement with a startup with partners that went through venture capital funding to merger acquisition to consider really entering the corporate world and becoming an executive. Now, thankfully, that lasted about 25 seconds. 7, keep a log of neutral zone experiences. 8, take this pause in the action of your life to write an autobiography. 9, think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. I do a retreat with a good buddy of mine called What's Next Exec, people who are currently CEOs or owners of business who are planning for their next contribution because they know they're not going to be happy, you know, playing golf every day. And the most, and I got feedback from a number of people at the first retreat that we did. I asked them to write down, the first thing that came to mind, because I wanted an emotional response, not a thought-out left brain, you know, what is your unlived life? And when they began writing about that, they were each astonished. And 10, reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your own life. The neutral zone, the time between the old life and the new, is a rich time for insight. And the third, and I want to wrap this and have time for discussion. The third phase, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, even aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when the path is a genuine new beginning. For a time, we may not even know which is the real path. Think about the important beginnings in your own past. You bumped into an old friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job in his company that opened up just that morning. You met your spouse to be at a party you really hadn't wanted to go to and almost skipped. You picked up a book that changed your life because there's only one lying on a friend's coffee table when you dropped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will soon find an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we are aligned with deep longings, when needs and ideals align with purpose. Each step forward will set off an internal warning system. The brain's error detection mechanism will read that something's wrong. This is not a signal to retreat to an old way of being. This is not an accurate read to say, well, my intuition is telling me this is not the thing to do. There is a highly sensitive component of your intuition. But when your error detection mechanism goes off, and when you leave your comfort zone and get uncomfortable, that's a misread to call that your intuition. Never underestimate the change back pressure from the system, your family, your company. It is their self-statement of reaction to change, an attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. A group or system has a status quo bias and inertia, as well as an individual. Everybody in the room who's subtly resisting your change also has an error detection mechanism that says you shouldn't be doing that. Jung said that the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown. The important distinction here is this. Have you really moved through the endings and the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending and aborting the neutral zone experience? Big question. One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? How do you visualize the success? We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We have not established a comfort zone, not grooved a default mode in our minds and brains, and we don't know the outcome. So beginnings can reactivate old anxieties, as well as making it very real that the ending has happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, maybe even trigger old memories of failures. And a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. And I say all these things just to be able to put it in perspective. For example, one of the challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is that we have to come to the end of the past, the hope that someone else will do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was than even what was traumatically so, because you have to give up hope of ever having had it exactly the way you wanted it, or still getting it in the way you wanted it in the past. And with it, the illusion that there's an ultimate arbiter of fairness. New beginnings need to have a clear sense of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve a new identity that replaces the old one. In the beginning, take things step by step. Recognize the assumption and resist the temptation that some other route will go smoothly, with events always exciting and meaningful. It's like comparing yourself to someone else. You're comparing your inside with their outside. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's important in a new beginning not to be preoccupied with results. For example, rather than each interview that does not produce a job being a failure and everything that happened being a mistake, reframe the process as an activity where each interview teaches something, creates a new contact, deepens an understanding of the process and of oneself. Now, this is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. For example, the new job is to find a new job. Every transition is a transition from something into something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes, an integration of a new identity with elements of the old one. There are many endings, many little beginnings, with emptiness and creation in between. There are very few times that we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present circumstances as they might appear to a relatively objective future self. When we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. This may contribute to looking back at our own past with a bit of alienation or disbelief, almost as if someone else lived. Exceptions occur at certain moments in life, perhaps prompted by the excitement of a major event, that we look ahead in time and think, I'll remember this moment forever. This awareness seems to change present experience, to enhance it with a special lighting and sharp focus. Here are some considerations to reinforce the new beginning. There are four. You have these in your notes. Be consistent. This is the best way to get an idea of how something will work, to be consistent and be totally immersed in the process. You can get an idea of how it's going to work if you're 100% committed to it. Shrink the change to ensure the stepwise successes. Evolve a new identity. Generate a symbol of this new identity, a representation that can be a consistent point of reference. And celebrate small successes. In 20 or so years, when we look back on present time, laced among experiences, will inevitably be some envy and regret. We envy the younger self who could relatively do so much, and will regret that the younger self did not do more, different, or better. We may wonder why we learned too little, loved too much, risked too low, and spent too much time in routine and distraction. This view from a future self, looking back to the present, can be very informative. Now I want to close with a question and a challenge. And really, to think about this, settle into your chair, close your eyes, and take a deep breath of breathing in relaxation and breathing out any tension to really think about first the question and then the challenge. The question: imagine a photograph of yourself 100 years from now. What is the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? And you've already thought of it because it's emotionally based, and you don't have to move it to your left brain to make it make sense. Now, here's the challenge. And listen to this carefully. It's a few lines. So here's the challenge. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening, silenced by the sensible obstacles we're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. Okay, we're back in discussion mode. Questions, thoughts, or even just clarifications about what we've talked about. I know it's a composite of a lot of information. That's part of why it's recorded, so you can go back and play back certain components. But right now, any thoughts or questions that might be helpful for us to talk about? The recording should be up within the next 24 hours at the page that you were directed to that has the downloads of the outline and the workbook components, the work pages and exercises. And each playback will be posted usually by noon the next day. Bill, the IT guy for CTA, is on it and is aware of it, and it should be there. So if you have any questions as you listen to it again, or those of you who weren't in attendance listen to it, jot it down and either email me, or we'll talk about it at the beginning of next time. And if there's some questions that I think would be really helpful for all of us to talk about, I'll save them for next time so we can begin next time discussion with this. Anything just briefly in the last minute or so today?
David, well, this is Anne Marie.
Yeah.
Anne Marie again.
I'm
a new coach. This is a transition for me from a previous lengthy career to coaching. And I'm very drawn to this world of change and transition as my specialty. So there's much I need to learn, a lot of practicing I need to do. So is there, and maybe this is a longer question than what we have time for right now, but in all that information that was just shared tonight, what advice would you have for a new coach in this area, you know, to really be of best service to her clients right now where she is?
I think you're doing it right now. You're involved in the process, not only of having completed training to develop skill and expertise and to do continuing education, the things that interest you and the things that contribute to the fundamentals of what you do in coaching, especially the areas that you want to specialize in and develop niches in, and to continue to work on yourself. The most important thing that I did when beginning my training as a coach was to engage a mentor coach. And I worked with a mentor coach from a couple of months before I did my training till a couple of months afterwards. Now, normal people don't take quite that long. But, in fact, coaching happens in a much faster way than therapy, and probably 2 or 3 months is an average time that I spend with most clients. But I would say one thing that you can do in addition to what you're doing now of continuing reading and engaging in learning experiences and really directing your own self-knowledge and continuing education is to consider working with a mentor coach. That can be a huge benefit and a huge catalyst to not only jump-starting your practice, but also growth in ways that are important. You know from the things that are offered at CTA, the continuing education teleseminars, which this is one, the various kinds of graduate studies. I offer a couple of courses through Mentor Path about New Life Story Wellness Coaches, and one that begins Wednesday for New Money Story Mentors. So there are areas of more in-depth training of philosophy, understanding, education, and really developing a system of coaching. It depends on your interest, but I think with that kind of question, you're already in the middle of it because you're asking the right questions, and that's going to direct your inquiry in an informed way. So I say congratulations on that, and you're right here in this course, so you're already doing it. Thank all of you very much. I know we're a minute over. Thank you all very much. I appreciate all of your energy and input. I look forward to our continuing collaboration, and don't hesitate to fire off an email with the answer to those 2 questions or other questions or other things that you'd like to discuss. Thanks very much. Look forward to picking up with you right here next week. Bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
Absolutely.